May it please the court?
Certainly.
In this case, we have nine clients or sets of clients who retained respondent and who were utterly let down by him. Five of those complaints were submitted to disciplinary counsel by respondent's clients. OCDC was the complainant on four of the cases after discovering misconduct while investigating another complaint. Mr. Nichols became a member of the bar in 2008 and began practicing with a firm in Clinton. He opened his own firm in 2011. He also acts as a city attorney for the city of Clinton, which is a part-time position. He has no prior disciplinary history. Respondent's admissions over the life of this case have evolved. In his brief, however, respondent has adopted informant's statement of facts and admitted all violations charged. Mr. Nichols has violated multiple rules of professional conduct, and he has violated most of those rules multiple times for a total of 37 violations. As briefly as possible, I will summarize the violations from the nine counts. Respondent violated Rule 4.1.4-1.1 when he failed to competently represent his bankruptcy clients, Mr. Rush, the Jones, the Johnsons, the Beaches, and the Shanleys. In these cases, respondent failed to file necessary information with the bankruptcy court, and after the court warned of the impending dismissal, the cases were dismissed without a discharge of the client's debts. Respondent violated 4-1.4 when he repeatedly failed to communicate with his clients, Ms. McClanahan, Mr. Allen, Mr. Rush, the Jones, the Beaches, the Johnsons, and the Shanleys. And he violated 4-1.3 when he failed to diligently represent his clients, Ms. McClanahan, Mr. Rush, the Jones, the Beaches, the Johnsons, and the Shanleys. Mr. Nichols violated Rule 4-1.6D when he failed to timely 1.160, when he failed to timely refund unearned fees to Mr. Bolt and Ms. Woody. Although respondent agreed to participate in a binding arbitration through the fee dispute resolution program, as to Ms. Woody's fee dispute, he violated 4-8.4C when he failed to comply with the order following that binding arbitration. 8 months passed between Mr. Bolt's request and his refund. Approximately 2 years passed between Ms. Woody's first request and her refund, and 1 year and 5 months between the date of the arbitration decision and the refund. With regard to his representation of Mr. Allen, respondent admits that he didn't adequately communicate with Mr. Allen. Respondent defended Mr. Allen in a domestic assault case. After his representation was terminated, respondent failed to forward Mr. Allen's file to Mr. Allen's new attorney as instructed by Mr. Allen in violation of Rule 4-1.16D. He made false statements to third parties, Ms. Dillman and Ms. Meredith, when he told them he would send and had sent, respectively, Mr. Allen's file to Mr. Allen's new counsel in violation of Rule 4-4.1. Respondent made a false statement in violation of Rule 4-8.4C when he testified that he had given Mr. Allen's file to Ms. Meredith. Respondent also didn't securely store Mr. Allen's file in that he cannot even retrieve it from a hard drive he used in violation of Rule 4-1.22. With regard to Ms. Woody's complaint, respondent wrongly represented the accused and the victim of a domestic assault, even cross-examining the victim after having refused to refund the unearned fees she had paid. Mr. Nichols revealed confidential information of Ms. Woody to another client in violation of 1.6. With regard to Ms. McClanahan, who had a property line dispute at the lake, respondent failed to adequately prepare for trial, to follow her instructions regarding obtaining a survey and speaking to relevant witnesses, to competently represent her at trial and to communicate with her. Respondent waived Ms. McClanahan's right to a jury trial without consulting her. Respondent failed to protect Ms. McClanahan's interests after the trial in that he didn't file an appeal or other post-trial motion, and he failed to give her file to another attorney so that she might have obtained the opportunity to appeal with another attorney's assistance. Respondent also engaged in misconduct towards disciplinary counsel in violation of 8.1A and C. Mr. Nichols repeatedly failed to respond to OCDC's lawful demand for information, even after an information was on file, reciting the multiple times that respondent already had failed to respond to OCDC. He missed response dates in four matters regarding his representation of other bankruptcy petitioners. Respondent knowingly made false statements when he told OCDC he would deliver his responses to OCDC on date certain and then did not. He also made false statements of material fact when he told OCDC that he had mailed a June 2013 response to OCDC, but then later admitted in his answer herein that he had not mailed that at all. In light of respondent's admissions, the questions remaining include the following. What is the appropriate sanction? What aggravating or mitigating factors are applicable? Has respondent met the requirements of 5.285? And given the nature and number of respondent's violations, is he eligible for probation? In determining the appropriate sanction, we look at the duty violated, the respondent's mental state, the injury or potential injury, and any mitigating or aggravating factors. I think the path is clear to go directly to a suspension as a baseline sanction in this case. Indeed, the disciplinary hearing panel, after a two-day hearing, recommended that respondent be suspended indefinitely with no leave to apply for reinstatement for 6 months. As I said, Mr. Nichols admitted to 37 instances of misconduct. Both the prior opinions of this court in attorney disciplinary cases and the ABA sanctions support suspension in this case. This court's cases with a similar array of violations include In re Cruz. The respondent in that case was found to have violated his duties of competence, diligence, and communication. He also failed to memorialize a contingency fee agreement in writing, and he engaged in dishonest, fraudulent, or deceitful conduct. Respondent's actions demonstrate a pattern of neglect with prosecuting plaintiff's cases that resulted in potential injury to his clients and the legal profession, wrote the court. This court suspended Cruz's license to practice law indefinitely with leave to apply for reinstatement in 1 year. Mr. Cruz had one prior admonition.
So why do you think the commission recommended, or the panel recommended 6 months, and you're recommending 2 years? Can you address that?
I don't know why they only went for 6 months. We believe that 2 years is more proper because of just the breadth of violations here, the number of violations, and the failure to cooperate with our office. Other cases, the court indefinitely suspended the license of an attorney with no leave to apply for reinstatement for 6 months in In re Zink. Zink was found to have violated rules 1.4, 4.1, 8.4, 8.4C, 8.4E. The court also suspended a lawyer's license with no leave to apply for reinstatement for 6 months in In re Stricker, where Mr. Stricker was found to have violated 1.3, 1.4A, 3.2, 1.16, and 8.4 and 8.1. Recently, in an order entered last June in In re Ganook, this court found that the respondent Ganook had violated 1.3 and 1.4A. That case involved four complaints, and respondent Ganook had three prior admonitions, two of which were for communications violations, but this court suspended Ganook indefinitely with no leave to apply for reinstatement for 1 year. Those cases talk about like his 1.4 and 1.3 communications and diligence claims, but with respect to his failure to cooperate with disciplinary counsel, Waldron is applicable, where the court found that the respondent had made false statements of material fact or law to the master appointed to hear the disciplinary counsel. Waldron was suspended for 6 months. In re Tesler, the court noted that it was particularly persuaded by the pattern of respondent's failure to cooperate with the work of the investigating committee. And
opposing counsel's conclusion says he's remorseful and has taken all necessary steps to prevent any similar instances from occurring in the future. Do you agree with that?
Mr. Nichols did express remorse at the hearing. I do not believe that he has yet reached the point where 5.285 is applicable as a mitigating factor. Even Mr. Nichols did not seek psychiatric care until after the two-day hearing we had in this case, and he has only been under his psychiatrist's care since June of last year.
Is it a relevant factor if you had mental illness, even if it's not, even if you haven't complied with the requirements to make it a formal affirmative defense? Is any mental health issues he had relevant to our consideration of his state of mind or culpability?
Well, the ABA standards include, you know, a mental health, an emotional problem mitigating factor. So that could be relevant there. I don't believe that his condition would disallow the finding of knowledge in this case. I mean, when you have multiple bankruptcy court orders that say, you have not done this, if you don't do this, you will, or your case will be dismissed and your client's debts will not be discharged. I don't see how, even with his mental disorder, that you can disallow a finding of knowledge with that kind of language in your face.
Thank you.
The ABA standards also support suspension in this case. He violated multiple ethical obligations to his client and to the legal profession. If we look at the ABA standards for diligence, for competence, for lack of candor, and for duties owed as a professional, suspension is the appropriate sanction. And as I said before, he does have knowledge to, he acted with conscious awareness of the nature or attendant circumstances of his conduct, but without the conscious objective or purpose to accomplish a particular result. It should be noted here, too, that there was injury or potential injury to his clients. Respondents' clients, the bankruptcy clients, had their petitions dismissed without a discharge of their debts. The Beaches, or many of the clients, had creditors called thereafter. Some of the clients had to retain new counsel, and he hadn't refunded all of them. And he clients were denied the use of their money when he delayed refunding. Ms. McClanahan lost her right, at the least lost her right to a jury trial and an appeal, and at the most lost her case and the value of her property because he didn't adequately
prepare. Your time is up. Thank you.
Please, the court. Mr. Nichols accepted the findings of the disciplinary hearing panel and rejected determination simply because at the time that the hearings were concluded, he did not have the reports from the treating physician and follow-up reports from his psychologist that we intended to introduce as mitigation. The informant is absolutely correct that Mr. Nichols committed multiple, we're not talking about a few, we're talking about several hundred violations, because this was a course of, I'm going to use the word conduct, not knowing conduct, but it was conduct. I mean, this is what was happening. He was not able to effectively represent his clients because of his obsessive compulsive disorder, his generalized anxiety disorder, and his attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
But we have a method in our rules for raising that as a defense, as a mitigator, why the sanction should be different, and you have to prove certain things, and that wasn't done here. So how should that affect the court's decision?
Yes, Your Honor, that is totally correct. The respondent did not have his first interview, first counseling, first examination with the MD, the psychiatrist, until after the last, we had two evidentiary hearings with disciplinary panel. His appointment with Dr. Trueblood was not until after that second hearing.
But
however,
whose fault is that? Doctor. I mean, whose fault is that?
He raised it
in his answer December 29th, 2015.
That's right.
It wasn't like it was a surprise to him. It wasn't like, he didn't understand that this was a mitigating factor that he could raise. He raised it way back in December.
Yes, sir.
And then even when he was denied a continuance to the first hearing, when it went on, he still had several days to do it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why isn't that in and of itself a valid consideration for the court to take?
Your Honor, we submit that that is a valid consideration. I think the court needs to look at all of the hard facts in the entire context. Mr. Nichols is not contesting that his license to practice should be suspended. He did what he did, Your Honor. What we're suggesting is, and quite frankly, the disciplinary hearing panel's recommendation of 6 months, that he can't even apply for a reinstatement for 6 months, is appropriate. What we believe, however, is that at the time they made those recommendations, they did not have the insight as to the medical conditions, because he just couldn't get in to see Dr. Trueblood on a moment's notice. It took him several months to get in to see her. He had started, he'd met with Dr. Doxey, who's a psychologist with a Missouri Lawyers Assistance Panel. I'm sorry, that was referred to him by the Missouri Lawyer Assistance Panel. And then he met with Dr. Stanley Beer, who is a psychologist. The psychologist, Dr. Beer, early on said you have an obsessive compulsive disorder and that he needed, ultimately that he needed a medical evaluation by a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, which he did get. And that's what took time to get in and to be able to formulate that analysis and report. That did not come about. His meeting was before the psychologist, before the disciplinary hearing panel's
opposing counsel
report.
I think takes the position in their brief that even if the court finds it relevant to consider this and looking at what is necessary to protect the public going forward,
right,
which I think is what you're asking, what you're suggesting,
yes, sir,
that there's been a failure to show that there won't be a recurrence and there's not yet been a meaningful, sustained period of successful functioning. And therefore, how can we accept what I think is your argument that he may not have timely pled it, but it's relevant to whether he'll be dangerous to the public on an ongoing basis if we don't yet know whether his treatment is successful because there hasn't been a long enough period of it to make that assessment?
Your Honor, that is an excellent issue, and it's quite bluntly, we can't protect the public. We cannot protect the public unless Mr. Nichols continues his treatment, his medical regime, because he has issues that deal with the chemistry of the brain. This isn't, and I'm certainly not negating the terrific impact of emotional distress from divorce, from death of a loved one, from issues like that. But those are more temporary. Mr. Nichols has a permanent condition. It is the same as being a diabetic, as suffering from high blood pressure. If he does not take his medication, he cannot survive. And the public cannot be protected. I like to use an analogy of drug dependence and alcohol dependence. People cannot get well until they hit bottom. And part of his disability is that he couldn't really see what's going on. When we're inside, we can't see out. But
our rule addresses that and says that's why you need to show that you have a sustained and meaningful period of successful functioning?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And
that the medications are assisting you in dealing with
it. Yes, and I apologize for not getting right to the point, okay? Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Nichols has been in treatment with Dr. Doxey since June of last year. And he is taking his medication. And her most recent report indicates that he is doing very well, that he is a very willing patient, that he is active in his compliance. As far as going forward, I believe, Your Honor, that with monitoring by the OCDC, Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel, by having a mentor, and that addresses a whole different subject that's not pertinent to this panel right now, which is the issue of sole practice, sole practitioners. And I don't know the answer to that question. It's not before us right now, but that is a problem, and
has
it's a problem for him.
He needs. Been practicing for the last year and a half?
He has been fully practicing, Your Honor. He has been, there's
been
no stop.
Have any complaints been filed?
No complaints have been filed, Your Honor. He has been not, and he is, enjoys an excellent reputation in his part-time job as the prosecutor for the city of Clinton and the occasional more dreaded duties of non-prosecution, the general counsel for them. He has been appropriately fulfilling his duties as a private practicing attorney in Clinton. He's had no other complaints, and he has been following his medical regime. He has been utilizing the excellent resources in fixing his office practice. One of the things with these kind of issues is having an office practice, policies and procedures to help protect us from ourselves being those of us with mental dysfunction. And he's been doing that very well.
The question,
yes,
I have,
Judge,
is Dr. Trueblood reports he's been doing very well. You're saying that, but it was based on self-reporting that he was doing very well. So
that's true.
He says he hasn't missed any deadlines. He says things are going great. And so there is no verification of that. You know, sometimes people never file a complaint if they have a problem with their attorney. Sometimes it takes them a lengthy period of time to do that. So how do we really know, other than his own assessment of his condition, whether things are very different now than they were at the time of the commission of these violations?
An audit of his practice could indicate that. Use of a mentor who is actively involved in assisting him, answering his questions, helping him through difficult times. An appropriate office manager that is looking at his docket control, that kind of thing. Also, Your Honor, another huge, huge issue is not taking cases that lead to problems. Mr. Nichols is an excellent criminal defense attorney. I happen to have my personal expertise in that, and I know from his actions and from what I've seen from other folks that he is highly regarded in that area. Bankruptcy practice clearly was a disaster. He is not doing bankruptcies anymore. And again, Your Honor, to answer your question, it's going to take someone actively supervising him, which the OCDC can do. And he must have a mentor. He must have an actively participating mentor. He must have an outside consultant, such as Sarah Reed, someone that is paid by him to come in and check his office practice procedures occasionally. And Your Honor, other than, we can't put in criminal law, we can put a GPS on somebody to see where they're going. And I don't, there is no, quote, GPS, if you will, as an analogy, to see that we as attorneys are doing everything we're supposed to.
So you're saying he's very willing to have strong supervision.
Your Honor, we have suggested that in our brief, and if we didn't make that clear, I apologize. The only way that the number one goal is the safety of the public. People need to have efficient, reliable, and competent legal representation. Mr. Nichols can provide that. None of us lawyers, physicians, can provide appropriate care and counseling if we are suffering from mental disease or defect that is not treated and handled. Certainly, Social Security recognizes that there are many mental diseases and defects, and I don't mean defects in a bad way, but dysfunction, that totally disable people. In this particular case, Mr. Nichols is not disabled as long as he takes his medication. And appropriate regime includes exercise, includes eating right, includes moderation of any kind of alcohol, includes practice management, which also includes staying away from the work that you're not competent in doing. Don't take cases in over your head. And that's something he has recognized, he's doing. And all I can suggest, Your Honor, the other very important thing, I believe, is maintaining the integrity of the system, the legal system. And the integrity of the legal system, I think, requires that he be suspended. That is public knowledge. Today, we have the internet. This court's order is going to be front and center. Google Richard Nichols when this case is over and you've entered your order. Google him and you're going to have, bang, right there, the order of this court, suspending him for the practice of law. Suspending him for the practice of law and then putting him in, on probation for whatever period of time. That order is going to be there. People are going to see it. And that is a significant detriment to his reputation and that kind of thing going forward. He's going to have to prove to the public that, you know, many years from now he's still practicing and he's getting referrals from existing clientele. I think that's one way we can look at protecting the public and the integrity of the reputation. I had something else and I forgot. The other thing, I think that it's important to recognize, Mr. Nichols initially did not comply with OCDC. He could not bring himself to admit his own failures. When someone is suffering from this kind of mental dysfunction, it's hard on the inside to see what is patently obvious to people that are healthy. It was a period of time. Therapy and assistance from Sarah Reed, from Sarah Rittman. He had excellent counsel at the beginning of this case. It takes some beating over the head. I believe Harry Truman said something about the Missouri mule. You know, we need to be hit over the head with the tube before, and then we begin to understand what's going on. It took Mr. Nichols some time to be able to even recognize that he suffered from a physical disability. Being a chemical imbalance in his brain. I believe he's seen his lesson. He's had a period of time. He's been doing well. He's not had a cessation of practice. And he's discharged his functions fully. And I have 4 seconds left, so I'm going to bail.
Thank you.
When Mr. Nichols saw the independent medical examiner, Dr. Doxy, in March of this year, which was a couple of days before the first day of the hearing, she found that he did still struggle, and he still suffered from these symptoms, and noted that he had been advised to see a psychiatrist as early as the prior October, and still had not done so. So then we get it to a couple of months later, and we go to the second day of the hearing, and he still is not seeing a psychiatrist at that point. He asks at that point that the record be kept open because he is supposed to be able to see Dr. Trueblood in a month or so. But the hearing panel denied that motion. So he does see Dr. Trueblood in June, and so that is when he finally started the medication in this case. So he goes through, a couple of years of investigation without getting the treatment he needs. And he doesn't even go see a psychologist until after the information is filed.
His point is that the mental illness prevents that, and once he started getting treatment, he was then able to see that, yes, indeed, he had needed treatment. And he's under treatment now, and that has changed his conduct. And if he's given close supervision, such as that discussed in the statute, in the rule, then there can be an assurance to OCDC and the public that he will continue to operate properly, that he has for the last 10 months. Tell me what your thoughts are on PAMP OCDC on that.
Well, our concerns are is that he's never responded to us in the past, so what is our assurance that he's going to respond to the probation monitor? I mean, he has to file quarterly reports. He's supposed to be in touch with his monitor or his mentor who's monitoring him. And so we're not certain, and we fear that he can't be adequately supervised to protect the public. Additionally, the rule 5.285 has a meaningful period of successful function. And so where are we dating that from? Are we dating that meaningful period from the first day he went to see Dr. Trueblood and obtained the medicine, or when we next hear from her her first report is in November. So is last November to now, is that long enough? Is that a truly meaningful period of successful functioning for him? Because that's the only time that he has gotten the care that he knows and had been told that he needed. And I don't believe that we have the track record we need with Mr. Nichols at this point.
Thank you. Case is submitted.